This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Thank you that you've come on to talk to us about brain tumor research and what's going on with the current campaigning that you're doing.
No, it's good to, really good to talk to you, Claire. And so we've got a petition running. We historically, we've used petitions as a way of engaging our community and it's amplifying and demonstrating the voice of the brain tumor community. And but you could say, why are they doing another one? It's been something that brain tumor research has spoken about since inception, really. And it's just essential. I always say, if we fund research, we will get closer to breakthroughs and a cure. And if we don't, we won't. It's as simple as that. So we've used petitions before. It's a way of engaging with our campaigning database. It's a way of coalescing and amplifying brain tumor voice. We'd like to get to 100,000. I think we're something around 75,000 now. But the important thing is that we've got a straightforward message. The brain tumor community is vocal. It's active. It wants to make a difference. And I think that's what we've been able to do at Brain Tumor Research, is to take that energy and that desire for change and push hard. And Claire, honestly, having been in this world for now, it's now 13 years, I think the political will is stronger than ever to make a difference in terms of research funding and improving things for brain tumor patients. We've just got to make sure now that we smooth the pathway, because it's a really interesting process. As we've got closer to the sort of the ministerial level, if you like, and spoken to more and more senior politicians about this, what you realize is that actually at some point it bounces back. You spend all of your time pushing to get to the minister, and then actually they'll bounce it back down to the funding bodies and the civil servants, and they're the ones that you've got to challenge and influence and lobby and cajole and pester, because they're the ones who actually make things happen.
Yeah.
The politicians will make the decision, and then they expect it to be enacted. You know that in 2018 there was £40 million that was put aside for brain tumor research. We didn't think the money was available. It was made available. Then through our role as provider of the secretariat for the APPG, the All Party Parliamentary Group on Brain Tumors, we could ask the questions as to how much that money's actually been allocated through the NIHR. And 5 years down the line, it was 10.7 million. So only just over 25%. And I was on a phone call with George Freeman, the minister, science minister now, life sciences minister at the time, who was horrifying, because it was his decision to get that money made available. And as far as he was concerned, he'd made the decision that would then happen, but it didn't. So a lot of what we're doing now is finding out why that's the case and what we need to do to change things and make things different. And I think what we're finding is that there's an established way of doing things that is very hard for people who've been involved in those areas at the Department of Health and Social Care to change. So if you, and our argument would be, and the argument of the report was, if you're going to do things differently, if you're going to make a difference for brain tumors, and we all think that's what we need to do because of the stark statistics around it, we've got to make it a clinical priority. And if it's a clinical priority, you treat it as you might treat the COVID or something like that. You need to do things fast, and you need to do things in a different way, because it's a uniquely complex problem, and that hasn't really been happening. So that's the next challenge. It is about money. But even if we were to be given £100 million tomorrow, I couldn't say that I'd be confident that it would be allocated. And that's it would sit there. It's not like sitting there in a Halifax bank account, but it's sitting there not being allocated. So they'll say that the applications aren't the quality that we want, or the infrastructure's not there, all of these sorts of things. So we've got to get into the weeds there and find out what's going on and get that money out.
Yeah. Why do you think that brain tumor research has been left behind when it comes to fundraising?
I think there's lots of different things. I think that perhaps there isn't the capacity. I think if you put out a lot of funding called for breast cancer, there are a lot of people working in breast cancer. You'd get more people therefore apply, and then you'd have a better strike rate. Those people would then get progress because they got money, and then when they come to look for more funding, they can demonstrate progress, and there's that sort of snowball effect. So I think that's one of the reasons. I think that brain tumors are uniquely complex. I mean, I have been at something where someone said, why haven't we had progress in the, and a scientist or a researcher still like this? Well, it's really hard.
It's so difficult.
And you think,
yeah.
Actually, it is. It's uniquely complex. So that should be a challenge rather than a hindrance. And I think perhaps we maybe think differently about the way that we look at some of the research that we do. And maybe there are opportunities, rather than just looking through cancer lens at this, having the optic of neuroscience. What's going on with dementia research, perhaps, or research into epilepsy, that we can actually work alongside. So it's about being creative, bringing in new different disciplines. Again, that's the sort of spirit of the report. So there are a number of things like that. But I think that the visibility, and it's quite hard for you and I to step outside of it, because obviously we're in this world. But it feels to me that the visibility has been increased over the last decade because of just charities like us working hard to get a new guys getting out there and saying we need listening to and we need to improve things.
Do you think that maybe there just isn't enough scientists to take on brain tumor research?
I think that it comes to money again. I think people will go where they think there's money. Mm. They'll go where they think there's sustainable careers. Scientists are no different to postdocs. They're no different to anyone else. They want to have a future. They want to have some form of security. It's quite shocking just how insecure a life scientific can be. And so people need to have that kind of feeling that there is enough money to sustain a career where you can get to the point where you're actually publishing papers and can establish a reputation. And similarly, we want people to stay in that scientific endeavor, whether it's as part of their NHS clinical work or to when they've got a choice between going down a clinical path or a scientific path. It seems a viable option to choose science because at the moment, I think too often it becomes a clinical. It offers the pathway to becoming a consultant, a pension, and a long-term career, whereas science can be seen as slightly less secure. So I think that there's cultural changes that are needed there too. But from my understanding, when money comes into the arena, people start applying. And then it's about how they're treated as well. A lot of what we've been talking about is if people are looking for scientific funding, that they're judged by their peers, people who understand brain tumors and say, actually, yeah, this is a good application, not by someone who isn't a specialty. If they are rejected, they're rejected in a manner that is helpful and establishes them to reapply again. So if you get feedback that says, we see all the work you've done, we respect it, there are a couple of things that you need to address, and then we'll review your funding application. That's great. But we hear of people, and they are really at the top of their game, well-respected scientists who are getting knockbacks on a lot of work, putting a grant application together in just a couple of lines. So one of the things that we're pushing at Brain Tumor Research along the side of the Tessa Jail Brain Cancer Mission is to get people in a better shape before they actually get together and put in their funding application and actually try to improve the strike rate and their chance of success. Hmm. One of those things that actually, something like a brain tumor research with our fundraisers, and we encourage them to go to the labs that we fund and to engage with our Wall of Hope campaign. And there's an interaction between scientist and fundraiser, which I think is great for the fundraisers, but it's great for the scientists too. It gets them into the kind of understanding much more. It gives it a personal dynamic in the work they've done because they see and hear from patients and families. And also I think patients and families go in there and ask questions that another scientist might not ask. That thing where someone who doesn't know about the field that you're an expert in asks you something you think, my goodness, I've never really thought of it quite like that. Yeah. And I think that happens quite a lot.
If people who are fundraising for brain tumor research want to go to see the centres, how does that happen?
We have structured lab tours pretty much termly. All of the centres specialise in different areas. We've got a new centre at the ICR in Sutton, the Institute of Cancer Research, which is focused on paediatric gliomas. In Plymouth, they look at meningioma and low-grade tumours. Imperial, it's surgery and tumour metabolism. And then GBM at Queen Mary University, London. So we're not going to have lab tours all the time because it's taking people away from the work that we're funding. And there has to be some sense of people who are our supporters doing it because it's our sort of research centres that they're visiting. And being funders to a certain level. Now, that level is at least £2,740, because that's the amount it costs to fund a day of research at one of our centres. And once you've done that, you have a tile to put on a wall of hope. We have little walls of hope at every centre that people can come and place a tile on to celebrate their fundraising. So that's the route to doing it. And they are heavily subscribed, but I would suggest people come onto the Brain Tumor Research website.
Recently, you now work together with Brains Trust, which is great. You've got all the research on one side and then you've got all the support on the other side. And it's just, I think it's a fantastic collaboration. It's a genius partnership.
I've known Helen and Will at Brains Trust for a long time, and we're always very happy to signpost to them if there's something, someone comes along to us and says that we feel that they would benefit from connecting to Brains Trust. And then you're absolutely right, they are patient facing. We work with them in some areas, and some areas we say, well, that's what Brains Trust do, and we do what we do. And I think that is a good collegiate way to work. Let people celebrate their strengths and do what they're good at, and let other people do other things.
You're quite frequently on TV. You tend to be the voice spokesperson for brain tumor research. If people want to get onto the news, if they've got a fundraising event, can brain tumor research help?
We have a PR department, and they would share stories and make contact with BBC local radio, BBC and ITV. But if they're listening to the radio and someone is talking about something that could have a relevance to brain tumors, then phone up. Quite often what happens, Claire, is that someone will be saying, I'm going to do one of the day or skip campaigns or wear a hat day or whatever. And then they'll work with our PR team, who will then share their story around, and then I'll go onto the radio with them so that they can talk about why they're doing it and their own personal story. And I can get the wider picture on the money they're raising is doing and what the awareness that they're raising is doing.
Recently, your chief executive, Sue Farrington-Smith, has now stepped down from being the chief executive. That's now moved over onto Dan Knowles. How has that transition affected you as the charity?
Sue is a force of nature. I've just trailed along in her wake for the last 13 years. And she won't mind me saying, because it is public knowledge, she's had her own issues with cancer, not brain cancer, but other cancer, and had some very major surgery just over a year ago. And she's come back and she realized that she perhaps doesn't have the stamina that she did have. And she had a remarkable stamina. She was working till 2 o'clock every morning and running meetings and looking after the family and all this sort of stuff. And she just felt that it was time to step back. And so we now have, so she's going back in as a trustee.
I remember meeting Sue. I've met her on a few occasions, but one of them was we were in Portsmouth and she was showing us around the laboratories. And I just remember I was there with a friend of mine, Melinda. And she asked Melinda what was her story. And when she told her story, she got really tearful. And I just thought, that's amazing. She really is passionate about it.
And Sue had so much empathy.
It's obviously still quite raw as to why she does it. And she does
do it originally because of her sister's daughter.
That's absolutely right. Yes, yeah. Alison Thielen, who tragically died just before her 8th birthday. So, Claire, it's an interesting time at the charity. There's a lot of people within the charity who do have their own personal brain tumor stories. But now Dan has come in and he has, I think, three people that he's known have been impacted by brain tumor stories. And so we're welcoming Dan, who's brimming over with energy. And I think that he would be okay for me to say his brief here isn't to change things. It's just to keep us going on the same path, doing what we've been doing, focusing on the funding for our research, focusing on getting greater national investment in brain tumor research. Sue's slightly more influencing from the background now, but she's still here, but Dan's driving the engine. So it's important that what we're doing is building a network, and a collaborative network where people will talk to each other. And I think that this is one of the things that I've learned, that the progress won't be a eureka moment by one maverick scientist. It's going to be a series of jigsaw pieces being put together at conferences and through papers and collaborations, and slowly we'll get there, because it's such a complex disease.
Thank you very much, and thank you for still staying there, because it's not an easy job. It's not an easy area to be involved in. It's not, because it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. I am very grateful to anyone that's still doing it. Thank you. This is the Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.